welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, detective drama. Later on, we'll hear yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from 1962, purportedly the last year of radio's golden age. Right now, it's Dragnet, starring Jack Webb and Barton Yarborough. From their first year on the air, from November 16, 1950 on NBC, the story is The Big Parrot.
Have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A man and his wife are found dead in a rooming house. A dead parrot lies on the floor beside them. The killer set fire to the room to cover his tracks. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, April 2nd. It was windy in Los Angeles. We were working the early morning watch out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from communications, and it was 5:25 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide. Ms. Jones?
Yes, who is it?
This is Joe Friday. I'm sorry to bother you, Ms. Jones. Is Lee there?
Oh, yes, Joe. Just a minute. I'll wake him. Lee, honey.
Yes?
Lee, it's Joe Friday. He wants to talk to you.
Yeah, Joe. What is it?
I'm sorry to wake you. Can you come down right away?
What's the trouble?
Got a call from fire headquarters a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah?
They had a fire in a rooming house over on 7th Street. They found two dead bodies in one of the rooms.
Yeah? They suffocated?
Well, the battalion chief doesn't think so. They found both bodies on the bed. There was evidence of arson in the room.
What kind of proof they got?
The victims. That's why we called you.
And what you got?
Fire department thinks they were dead before the fire started. 5:30 a.m. Romero and I drove out to the rooming house on 7th Street. It was a two-story building in the middle of the block between South Grand and Toledo Avenue. On one side of it was a small transient hotel, and the other, a building which housed a bookbinding firm and studios for an acrobatic dancing school. When we got there, the salvage crew was still working. We were directed to the second floor, where we met with a man in charge from the fire department, Battalion Chief Sullivan.
It's right down the hall here. Watch your step there.
Oh, yeah.
You have the names of the victims, Chief?
We think it's Guthrie, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Guthrie. Old couple, lived here for some time, I understand. Here we are. We figure that's where it started, right under the bed over there.
Heat must have been terrific. Under the walls, you know.
Yeah. This is where most of the damage was done, Chief?
No, rooms on both sides got it, too. Not as bad as this, though. Guthrie's had two rooms, this and the one adjoining, through the door there.
When the fire starts, got any idea?
About 4:45, I'd say. Landlady smelled the smoke about 10 to 5, put in the alarm. Fire was out 3 minutes after 5.
Any other casualties besides the Guthrie's, I mean?
No, just the two.
Okay.
Over on the bed here.
Yeah.
One of the worst I've seen.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Ben, you can see from the position of the two bodies, doesn't look to me like they suffocated.
Mm-mm.
No evidence that they tried to get out of the room. Both relaxed. Looks like somebody did them in and tried to cover with arson, huh?
Oh, Chief.
Yeah?
On the floor there.
Oh, yeah, a parrot. Somebody wrung its neck, looks like to me, and then threw it there on the floor.
There's the empty cage on the corner, door's open.
Chief?
Yeah, Wyatt?
Schubert's still talking to the landlady?
He hasn't come back. Clyde'd like you to meet Friday and Ribello.
No.
Sorry, Friday and Romero, homicide detail. This is Clyde Wyatt from the arson squad.
Hi, Wyatt.
How are you?
You want to show him that setup, Clyde? How it was touched off?
I'm glad to. You can take a look under the bed there. It tells most of the story. See directly underneath there?
Let me see.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, Wyatt? It's pretty charred.
Rags and papers. Had a good soaking in kerosene before they were touched off. Strung out all under the bed here.
Yeah. Couldn't miss, huh?
Thorough guy, whoever set it up. Most of the carpeting in the room was doused with kerosene, too.
This much you can count on. The man who touched it off knew something about timing devices. Want to show him that rig, Clyde?
Right here.
Yeah?
Ordinary electric heater. This automatic timer was connected to it, then plugged in. Heater was placed under the bed right next to the rags and papers. Timer was set probably for about 4:45 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Timer let go on schedule. Heater warmed up. Rags and papers caught fire, then the mattress. You can see the rest for yourself.
That timer pretty intricate, Wyatt.
The man who put it together was no amateur, as the chief said. Must have known something about clockwork.
Wyatt, see you a minute?
Yeah, Mac. Excuse me, I'll be back in a minute.
Too bad. Thanks very much.
You find anything else that might tie in, Chief?
Not in this room, no.
Dead parrot there. Door of the cage open.
Yeah, probably a pet. Might have been out of the cage at the time of the fire.
Mm.
Is it possible the parrot could have suffocated, Chief?
Not from what I can see, no. As I say, it looks to me like somebody wrung the bird's neck. A few green feathers on the floor there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the adjoining room in there.
Okay.
I figure the Guthrie's used it as a sitting room.
Yeah.
You can see the fire didn't wipe out everything in here.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Joe. Come here, man.
Right.
This carpet here with the door. Dark stains.
Let me see.
What do you think?
Could be blood.
Heavy stains. Sure enough of them.
Yeah. Looks like more of them are that desk there. And some on the wall, too.
Desk drawer's open here.
Yeah, I see that.
That's about it. You know as much as we do so far.
Yeah.
We know how the fire was touched off. We're satisfied it didn't kill those two people in there.
The boys from Larson's squad talking to the other roomers in the building?
Right now, you can check with them.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Chief.
I certainly appreciate it.
Not at all. The usual breaks, isn't it?
How's that?
This is fire prevention week.
5:53 a.m. Lieutenant Lee Jones and the crew from the crime lab arrived. Davis, the photographer, Dean Bergman from Leighton Prince. Pictures were taken of both rooms, which made up Mr. and Mrs. Guthrie's living quarters. Photographs of the bodies were taken. Bergman processed for fingerprints. While Lee Jones continued his investigation, Ben and I went down the hall to the landlady's apartment, where we met with Ray Schubert, one of the men from the arson squad.
These men are from Homicide Division. Sergeant Friday, Sergeant Romero, Mrs. Stedman, that right?
Yes, Clara Stedman. How do you do?
Yeah.
I manage the house here. Would either of you care for a cup of tea?
No, thank you.
I wouldn't care for anything. When did you last see Mr. and Mrs. Guthrie, ma'am?
Well, now, let me see. Miss Guthrie, I saw her just before dinner last night, a little before six. I went in to borrow an egg and a cup of flour. She was all right then.
Was there anyone with her?
No, she was alone.
What about Mr. Guthrie? When did you last see him?
About 7:30. I looked out my window and I saw him closing up the parking lot.
Did the Guthries have any visitors at all yesterday? Do you remember that?
Oh, just one I know of. Jack Marshman. He's working for Mr. Guthrie about a year now.
When did Marshman visit the Guthries, do you know?
Around 4:00 yesterday afternoon. Yes, I was there too. Mrs. Guthrie and Jack and I had a cup of tea together. Then Jack left to go back to work and then I left.
You didn't notice anyone else in or near the Guthrie's rooms after that, hmm?
No. I had my dinner and listened to a radio play, and then I went off to bed.
Well, I know you're upset, Mrs. Stedman, but can you think of anybody who might have wanted to do away with the Guthrie's? Anybody who had a reason to do them harm?
Oh, as far as I know, Sergeant, they didn't have an enemy in the world. I guess I was wrong. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, we'll leave our card here with you.
All right.
If you want to contact us, don't hesitate to call anytime.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Miss Stedman. Goodbye, ma'am.
Goodbye.
time again?
6:15.
That's pretty early. They ought to be able to post the bodies for us this morning.
Day Friday?
Oh, yes, Chief.
Jones, your crime lab man's looking for you.
Thank you. Ben, you call the coroner, do you?
Yeah, he's on his way over.
Right. Lee?
Hi. I'm looking for you. Got a few things.
Yeah, what's that?
This hammer. Found it over in the corner under some of the rubble.
Yeah.
These stains on the metal handle here, on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Gave it the benzidine test. It's blood.
You figure it's a murder weapon?
I'll know more when I get the coroner's report. Bergman lifted a lot of nice prints. A lot of them all over everything.
Yeah.
On the handle of this hammer, on that timing contraption over there, the one that touched off the fire, even left some in the next room on that metal box in the drawer of the desk.
How did that?
Got good prints from each room. They match. Go in the next room and something else.
All right.
Those stains on the carpet by the door, the stains on the carpet by the desk, those on the wall, blood stains, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see here, trail of stains, all leading through the door into the murder room.
You figure they were murdered in here, and then the killer took the bodies in the next room and put them on that bed, huh?
Then he set fire to cover up.
How about the prints on the box and that desk, Lee?
Might have been money in the box.
Possible burglary?
That's an angle. I'll take scrapings from these stains on a biological precipitant when I get back to the lab. I'll let you know how it comes out. Better start finishing up here.
Right, Lee. Thanks very much.
Well,
looks like we're in fair shape. A hammer, a couple of fingerprints.
Righty. Romero?
Yes, Huber?
That fellow that worked for Mr. Guthrie in the parking lot, Jack Marshman, just got here.
Did you talk to him?
Why didn't I have him in one of the empty rooms down the hall?
Thanks. Which way?
Down here. Seems pretty well broken up.
You talked to anyone besides you since you got here?
No, I told him the Guthries were dead, that's all. He's taking it pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Right here.
There's friends I had, Charlie Marner. I knew I should have stayed with him. I knew I should have.
These men are from Homicide, Mr. Marshman.
Huh?
Sergeant Friday and Sergeant Romero.
Hello, Mr. Marshman.
How are you?
I don't know what I can tell you. I can't understand. Poor Charlie and Mort.
Well, what can I do to help?
We'd like to have you answer a few questions, if you don't mind, sir.
Certainly. Certainly anything to help out. Please, you got to find out whoever did it. You got to find out who killed them.
We're going to try, Mr. Marshman. Now, would you tell us the last time you saw the Guthries alive?
Sure. Mort, Mrs. Guthrie, about... 4:15 yesterday afternoon. Me and Mrs. Stedman, she's a landlady, we had tea with her. And I went back to help Mr. Guthrie at the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. When's the last time you saw him?
Oh, it was about 6:30. That's when I got off duty at the lot. I said goodbye to Charlie. Never dawned on me it was the last time I'd see him alive. I just can't understand. It's such a vicious thing, Charlie and Mart. It's really terrible.
Yes, sir. You want to just sit down there, Mr. Mart?
Thanks very much.
Right.
Yeah?
Are you sure you're the only one who talked to Marshman since he got here?
That's right. I met him at the door downstairs.
Well, the only thing you told him was that the Guthries were dead.
That's all he got from us.
Any chance he could have been in the room since the fire?
Not a chance.
Then how do you know somebody killed him? Wednesday, April 2nd, 6:45 a.m. Lee Jones and his men completed their investigation and took their findings back to the crime lab for further examination. The deputy coroner arrived and removed the bodies of Mr. and Mrs. Guthrie to the county morgue. Together with Clyde Wyant and Ray Schubert of the arson squad, Ben and I continued questioning the Guthrie's friend and employee, Jack Marshman. His answers got more confused and he kept contradicting himself. In some ways, he seemed childlike. In others, a good deal more complex. We strung along. In order to keep up the pretense that he was not a suspect, we asked him to come along with us while we checked his living quarters, a two-room basement apartment near Olympic and South Flower. We explained it as a routine check. Marshman was calm and self-assured.
Well, here it is, officer. See for yourself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice, comfortable place.
I like it. I've been here for about 3 years. Well, this room's where I do my living. Pull-down bed. It's a little gas plate over there. It's handy. Compact.
Mm-hmm. I see. What do you use this next room for here, Jack?
Oh, that's my shop. I like to put it around. You care to see it?
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice. What's your hobby?
Watchmaking. Used to be a watchmaker. I haven't worked at it lately, though. Job's pretty hard to find.
Yeah. These parts here on the bench. You making something, Jack?
Oh, just fooling around. Old alarm clock there. I'm fixing it up for a friend.
All these wires and things. They all go into the works, huh?
More or less, yeah. Just something I was fooling around with. It keeps me busy, you know. I like a hobby. They say it's good for you.
Well, that's what they say, yeah.
Where does this door go, Marshman?
Oh, that's my closet. Just some clothes and stuff in there. Just junk.
Don't mind if I look, do you?
Well, it's only a closet. They're just clothes and junk. There's nothing to see.
Say, Jack, do you usually keep this stuff around?
Huh? Oh.
It's kerosene, and it's pretty dangerous to store like this. There's no cap on it.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me. I got to get a cap for that. I use it to wash up. My hands get dirty working around the bench.
This shirt, these trousers, are yours, Jack?
I wish you wouldn't drag that stuff out. It gets my stuff all mixed up. Yeah, they're mine.
That's what I figured. These stains here, quite a few of them.
Some kind of paint I was using. I'm pretty sloppy with paint.
Mm-hmm. That's not paint, is it, Jack? It looked like blood to me.
What difference does it make? The working clothes.
I think your reason was in the day.
Well, why don't you lay off?
Hmm?
Who cares what kind of stain it is? You come in here snooping around, looking all around. I invited you in here. I didn't give you the place. This is my apartment, and this is my shop. Now, you can get out. You hear me? Both of you can get out.
What's the matter, Jack?
I said you can get out.
All right. You want to tell us before we go?
I'll tell you what.
Why you killed the Guthries.
What do you mean?
Why did you kill Mr. and Ms. Guthrie?
No reason. I just did it.
9 a.m. We put the stained clothing and the materials from the workbench in the car. Together with the suspect, we headed back for the office. On the way, Marshman was quiet. He asked for some breakfast. We stopped and bought him some ham and eggs. We tried to get him to talk. He refused. After breakfast, we dropped the stained clothing and the other things at the crime lab, and then we drove to the city hall. We parked the car in front of the Spring Street entrance and started up the stairs.
Hey, wait a minute.
What's wrong?
I've been thinking.
Yeah?
It's all a mistake.
What is?
I didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't kill him.
9:47 a.m. Ben and I took the suspect into the interrogation room. We checked him through R&I. He had a record of 2 petty thefts the year before. We went back to the interrogation room and got on the phone. We called Leighton Fingerprints.
We made them, Joe. The prints on the hammer, the timing device, and the metal box on the desk. They all belong to Marshman.
10:03 a.m. I called the county morgue.
Bodies identified as Mr. and Mrs. Charles Guthrie. Cause of death, Mrs. Guthrie. Multiple depressed fractures of the skull. Subarachnoid hemorrhage. Blunt instrument. Cause of death, Mr. Guthrie. About the same. Compressions of the brain in the occipital area around the brainstem.
10:25 a.m. I put in a call to Lee Jones at the crime lab.
The materials from the workbench are the same that went into that automatic timer, Joe. Pieced together the cut ends of some of the wires. They match.
How about the stains on his clothes?
Human blood.
10:45 a.m. We laid it out for the suspect, step by step.
Let me rest a while. I'll feel better. Let me think.
We stayed with him. We waited. 11:20 a.m. The suspect opened his eyes.
Sergeant?
Yeah?
I want to talk about it.
11:25 a.m. Schubert and Wyatt from the arson squad joined us. We called in one of the stenographers to take Marshman's statement, Eleanor Eastlack. She automatically took down the time, the place, and those present.
Jack, this is Miss Eastlack. She's going to record your statement so there'll be no misunderstanding as to what you say at this time.
How do you do, ma'am?
Hello.
Joe, you want to handle the question?
All right. Jack, we've got a few preliminaries here for you.
Okay.
John Everett Marshman, is that your true name?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
122 and a half Morgan Place, apartment B.
What's your age?
37.
Occupation?
Watchmaker, when I'm working.
Well, now, Jack, you've indicated to us in a previous conversation that you're willing to make a statement setting forth the true facts surrounding the deaths of Mr. and Miss Charles Guthrie.
That's right, I'll tell you.
Were you in their home Tuesday, April 1st? That's yesterday.
Yeah, that's right, I was.
What time did you get there?
First time? About 4:05 in the afternoon. Mrs. Guthrie was there, and so was the landlady, Mrs. Stedman. We had some tea.
Was anybody else present while you were there?
No, it's just the three of us.
How long did you stay there?
I left about 4:15, I guess. I was there about 20 minutes.
Where'd you go when you left?
Well, back to the parking lot, as usual. Charlie Guthrie left and went home to dinner. He got back about 6:15. I left at 6:30, quitting time.
Where'd you go after you left the parking lot?
Went around the block and then back to the Guthrie's place.
Why'd you go back there?
To get money. Charlie never paid me enough.
picked me up expecting me to work for nothing.
All right. Now, in your own words, will you tell us just what happened starting when you entered the Guthrie's apartment the second time?
Mrs. Guthrie opened the door and I went in. She gave me a cup of tea and I told her I wanted some money. She wouldn't give me any. I don't know why, but I was mad. I was sick and tired of both of them. They never gave me enough money.
Elmer?
I'm getting it, Sergeant.
All right, go ahead, please.
Mrs. Guthrie went in the next room and I went over to the desk and got the money from the box that they keep it in. I don't know how much. I grabbed all of it and that parrot started squawking. Mrs. Guthrie came running in. She saw me with the money and she says, "Jack." I picked up something and hit her. It was the hammer. And I kept hitting her.
Can you remember how many times you hit her, Marshman?
Oh, I don't know. She fell down. The parrot was still squawking and jumping around the cage. I went over and opened the door of the cage and pulled the parrot out. It stopped moving finally. I went in the bedroom and threw it on the floor, and then I dragged Mrs. Guthrie in the bedroom and put her on the bed, and I left.
Where'd you go?
No, I don't know. I walked around. Tried to think of something. It was cold. I got a bottle of wine, I drank it, and then I got to thinking about what Charlie'd do when he got home. I knew he'd be sure I did it. He always blamed me for everything. So I finally went back to the Guthrie's place and found the hammer that I used on her.
What'd you intend doing with the hammer?
Kill Charlie. If she had it coming, so did he. You can't blame me if they forced me into it. Anybody would have done the same.
What'd you do after you found the hammer again?
I picked it up and waited for Charlie to come home. Remember that. Wine made me feel pretty good. I stood there in the dark holding the hammer. Watched out the window for Charlie. It was cold out, I remember that. There's a radio on down the hall, and I held on to the hammer and waited for Charlie. Neon light across the street that came through the windows. Old lady was on the bed in there. I could see the parrot on the floor. It was quiet. I had a smoke. Traffic kept going by outside. I could hear that. Held on to the hammer. It's windy out. I kept thinking Mrs. Guthrie was looking at me from the bed, but she wasn't. Charlie came home at the usual time, a little after 7:30, and I stood by the door. He came in and closed the door after him. When he reached for the lights, I hit him. He fell down, I hit him some more. You couldn't blame me. Anybody would have done the same. Anybody would have, the way he kicked me around.
How many times did you hit him, Marshman?
I don't know.
Was it twice? Three times?
I hit him really quick moving. That's all. I took and dragged him into the bedroom, put him on the bed with his wife. I put him over. Wiped the stains off of me and left. It was the only thing I could do.
Where'd you go then?
My place. I knew that timer had to do the trick. I put it in a shopping bag with some stuff, and I went back to the Guthrie's. They were still there on the bed. The parrot was on the floor.
Would you repeat that last part, Mr. Marshman?
Well, I said they were still on the bed, the Guthrie's, and a parrot was on the floor next to the bed. Put the kerosene on the carpet and the rags and paper under the bed and rigged up the electric heater and the automatic timer and set it off.
A little slower?
Yeah, would you speak up, Jack, and then slow it down just a little bit?
Oh, sorry.
How did you rig the timer to set off the heater, Marshman? Can you tell us?
Oh, it'd take all morning to tell you. You got the timer. I'll take it apart and explain it to you if you want.
All right.
What was your purpose in setting fire to the room? You knew both Mr. and Mrs. Guster were dead, didn't you?
Well, sure. Sure they were. They forced me into it. I set the fire to make it look like an accident, like they'd burned to death.
Well, what'd you do after you set the timer?
Well, I left, went down the street, bought a couple of bottles of wine, talked to the guy a minute. And I walked around a while. It was too cold, so I went home.
When'd you get home?
2:30, maybe. I don't remember too well.
Did you go right to bed?
Yeah.
Did you go to sleep?
No. No. I laid there and read a movie magazine, drank the wine. Finally, I finished up the two bottles and dozed off.
What time did you get up?
A little before 6 this morning. Went down to the Guthrie's to nose around. That's when I met you guys. Well, you know all the rest because I've been with you ever since.
All right, Jack. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I told you everything.
All right. And this statement was given free and voluntarily, and there's been no promise of immunity or reward extended to you?
Yeah, that's right.
Was any force, violence, or duress used to induce you to make this statement?
No.
Okay. These questions and answers have been recorded by the secretary here. After they've been transcribed, will you be willing to sign it as a true statement?
Sure, sure, I'll sign it.
All right, Elmer. Can you get that out as soon as possible?
All right, Sergeant.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it, huh? All of it?
That's it.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm tired. It's been a long night, a long one.
Get used to it.
Huh?
They're going to get longer.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On July 29th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 86, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. John Everett Marshman was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree, 2 counts, and arson, 1 count. He is now serving a life term in the state penitentiary without possibility of parole. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portions transcribed from Los Angeles.
Dragnet on Tune 2 yesterday, an NBC episode from their first year on the air from November 16, 1950. 10.6 million people were tuned into NBC on a Thursday night at 10:30 to catch that broadcast with Jack Webb and a new police show at the time. The highest rated detective drama on the air in competition was CBS Radio's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, also heard on Thursday night 2 hours earlier and drawing 7 more million listeners to their radio sets.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Doctor, I'm Mike Patterson. It's my father. Is he all right?
We'll see, Mike. Where's the car?
Just kept going after he got hit. He's all right, isn't he?
I'm afraid not, Mike. Your father is dead.
But, Mr. Floyd, how can the insurance company be so heartless?
Now, don't get me wrong, Mr. Patterson. You'll get the money in time, just as soon as I've heard the story from you and Dr. Warren.
And time is not good enough. I don't even have money to bury him decently.
I'll be frank with you, Patterson. That's one of the reasons I've been asked to investigate this.
You don't mean to say
Don't get upset. Just tell me the story as it happened. You'll probably get the money tonight. Let's begin with you, Dr. Warren.
Well, there's nothing much I can tell you, Mr.
Please,
Floyd.
Please, Doctor, whatever you can.
Mike's father was a man of about 65. His left leg was missing.
That happened in a railroad crash. It was years ago.
He seems to have used a single crutch to help him, judging from the callus on his hand.
Is that correct, Mike?
Yes. Practically all the time.
Where did the automobile hit him, Dr. Warren?
Mainly on the right side, from the look of things. That's where the worst damage was done.
All right. Mr. Patterson, suppose you tell me what you know about it.
Well, we were walking north, facing the traffic on the highway.
And the car that hit him was going south.
That's right. I particularly noticed the license plate as it approached. It was a Florida car, maybe heading home.
What make?
I don't know, but it was from Florida. I was helping my dad along, as I always did when he walked on the highway. And this car came along at a terrific speed and swerved towards us. I tried to pull my father off the road, but he couldn't move fast enough. The car hit him with a sickening thud and jerked him away from me. That's all I can tell you.
Well, I've got the whole story now, I think, for my report. I want to thank you, both of you. This will facilitate action.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I suppose that means that I can get the money soon.
Not exactly. That means that you'll go to the electric chair for the murder of your father.
Why did Mr. Floyd charge Mike Patterson with murder? See if you can find the 2 flaws in his story. In a moment, you'll hear Mr. Floyd explain. And now, let's see if your observation is as keen as Mr. Floyd's.
Let me go. Let me go, I tell you. You can't prove a thing.
Mr. Floyd, why did you accuse Mike of murdering his father? Was it simply because he's beneficiary?
No, Doctor. There are 2 things wrong with his story. First, he said his father was hit by a car with Florida license plates in front. Florida hasn't had front license plates in years. But more important, Mike said he was helping his father. Now, if a man's left leg is off, he uses a crutch on that side and is helped on the right side. And if they were facing traffic, Mike would have been on the inside and would have been hit by the car. We suspected what happened when we saw blood on Mike's own car, but now we know.
This is an hour of detective drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the insurance investigator with the action-packed expense account. Yours truly, Johnny Deller. Mendel Kramer assumes the role in the final season of the show from May 5th, 1962 on CBS. It's the Burma Red Matter.
Johnny Deller.
Well, at long last.
What?
I say it's high time.
It is, huh?
Well, isn't it?
I don't know. High time for what?
High time you answered that phone. And listen.
Well?
This is Jimmy Bartell.
Oh, Jimmy.
You know, over here at Mono Guarantee Insurance.
Of course I know. How are you?
Well, what happened to you, Johnny? Where have you been? I've been trying to reach you for about 4 weeks now.
Didn't you try my call service?
Yeah, I tried you. Huh? Oh, no, I guess I kind of forgot about that.
Oh, well, if you had, you'd have found out that last week I was at Grand Canyon, the week before in Corpus Christi, the week before that in Knoxville, Tennessee, and before that up in Boston.
Yeah, sure. Gallivanting around the country while I've been sitting here up to my neck in trouble, beating my brains out, working my head off.
Sounds to me like you need a plastic surgeon.
Huh?
What's the problem, Jimmy?
The Burma Red, Johnny.
The what?
You heard me. The Burma Red.
Jimmy, are you sure you want me and not the State Department?
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right, I'll bite. Who is the Burma Red?
Not who, but what.
Well?
And listen, we carry the insurance. $500,000 worth. You hear that, fella? $500,000.
I am deeply impressed.
And, baby, if you can't get it back for us, that's exactly what we're going to have to hand over in cold, hard cash. 500 G's.
Well, maybe I had better get to work on it.
Good. And I don't need to tell you what your commission will be if you do recover it.
What else do you think I'm thinking of?
Then the job is yours, Johnny. And, brother, I sure hope that you can find it and get it back.
The Burma Red.
Right.
Just one thing, Jimmy, if you don't mind.
Sure, Johnny.
Before I start gallivanting around the country, as you put it, looking for this thing...
Yeah?
Don't you think that it might be nice if I have some slight idea, some inkling of what it is, this Burma Red?
I told you. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Come on over here and I'll tell you all I know about it.
Okay.
The CBS Radio Network brings you Mandel Kramer in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Deller. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Mono Guarantee Insurance Company, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Burma Red matter. $1.20 for a cab from my apartment to Jimmy Bartell's office in the Spear Building down on the square. Jimmy's specialty, incidentally, is property insurance, especially where fine artwork is concerned. And in this case...
Yeah, Johnny, 4 solid weeks I buzzed that phone of yours, and what I thought of you for not being there to answer it wouldn't be fit to print.
All right, I'm here now, so stop bellyaching.
But maybe you're too late, fella. He's already gotten out of country with it.
The Burma Red.
That's right, the Burma Red.
Which is what?
I told you, Johnny, Oh, yeah, that's right, I didn't. Now, listen.
I'm listening.
It was brought over here a couple of years ago. It was part of a collection by some countess or other. Got written up in all the picture magazines.
Do I hear a slight echo?
Echo?
Yes, from the case I had on my hands last week.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what you had a case of.
But listen, go on.
Having been a part originally of the Buckingham Collection over there in England, you know, well, as you might expect, it was picked up here by Winkler and Winkler.
The big jewelry outfit down in New York.
The same.
Oh, then I do hear an echo. So it's a piece of jewelry and it's been stolen from them.
No.
The same as the O'Tara's necklace I recovered last week.
No, again.
For Northeast Indemnity. No?
No, Johnny. It's just a single unmounted stone, a ruby. But so help me, it's big enough to choke a horse, and now it's gone.
When did you say it was stolen from them?
I didn't, because it wasn't. They'd sold it to that wealthy old Mrs. Harvey Lerriman Brittingham. Lives up on the edge of town.
Oh, I see.
But 4 weeks ago, somebody neatly chiseled open her wall safe and walked off with it.
Chiseled?
Okay, blew it. What's the difference?
Plenty. Knowing a safecracker's method can help a lot in pinning him down.
Oh, the police think they know who did it, all right.
Well, what do you need me for?
To get that stone back.
But if they already know who did
it... But they couldn't prove it. Sure, the modus operandi, the way the safe was blown, it pointed straight to him and nobody else. But also, he was known to be here in town.
Who?
But they couldn't pin it on him. He had himself a perfect alibi. Who, Jimmy?
So maybe it was rigged. They couldn't break it.
Jimmy.
But, Johnny, it had to be Oscar Mayfield.
Mayfield?
They held him as long as they could. Went through everything he owns. Checked out every contact he made while he was here in Hartford. And all that got him was nothing. And not very much of that.
I'll say this. If Oscar Mayfield, the old master, made that heist...
So what could they do but let him traipse merrily on back to New York, where he's been living lately?
Look, Jimmy.
But I figure, despite the police report on all the work they did, I figure that somehow Mayfield got away with that ruby.
Jimmy, I'm inclined to think you may be right. I know Oscar Mayfield. He's clever. I've tangled with him before. And, come to think of it, he made a promise to me once.
Mayfield made a promise?
Mm-hmm.
What was it, Johnny?
That if I ever tried to interfere with him again...
Yeah, well...
He'd see to it that I had a very nice funeral. Expense account item 2. 65 cents for a cab to police headquarters where, after some inquiries, I ended up talking with Sergeant Holly Holcomb. He wasn't very encouraging.
Sure, Dollar. He was known to be in town. Known to have tried to leave right afterwards. Trademark he left on the wall safe was his. Plain as the nose in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And we pride ourselves on knowing the M.O.s of all the safe men within 1,000 miles.
Yes, I know you do. And rightly so.
But he couldn't pin a thing on him. All the direct evidence we didn't have on him because of his alibi apparently checking out all the way. We simply couldn't hold him on nothing more than suspicion any longer.
Yeah.
Especially with that smart mouthpiece he dragged in. If he tried, he would have sued us from here to kingdom come. I mean, if you know Oscar Mayfield.
Only too well, Sergeant.
And you know what I mean. I suspect him just as much as you do. But do we have something definite, some real tangible clue? Well, anyhow, he went back to New York.
Have you notified the police down there?
Sure I am. Lieutenant Singer at the 18th Precinct. And isn't he an old friend of yours?
Randy Singer? He certainly is.
Well, I haven't heard a word from him, not in over a week now, so why don't you call him? Or better still, go down there and see him. See what goes.
All right, Sergeant. Maybe I'll do that. There was some more talk between us, and Sergeant Holcomb gave me every detail of the job. Told me what they'd found and what they'd done about it. And yes, all the completely unconfirmed evidence pointed straight to Oscar Mayfield. Unconfirmed and unconfirmable evidence because of the man's unshakable alibi. Item 3, 85 cents for a phone call to Lieutenant Randy Singer, 18th Precinct, New York Police Department.
You mean to say you just now found out about that heist?
That's right, Randy. I just found out.
You see, Johnny, if you didn't spend so much time gallivanting all over the place, you might be of some use around here.
You didn't get a promotion for all the gallivanting I did for you last week.
Oh, darn it, I guess I should have worked that case myself. Well, how about this Mayfield?
You've kept an eye on him?
I've done everything but tap his phone line.
And?
Nothing, Johnny, absolutely nothing. You just didn't get on this one soon enough.
I know what you mean. Unless he's changed these last couple of years, Oscar Mayfield is not one to hold on very long to whatever he's lifted.
Right, and if he did snatch that stone, you can be sure he passed it on and collected for it long before this.
And yet there's always the chance.
So, in the case of a big hunk of rock like that, it means one of two things. The guy who bought it from him is either carting it out of the country and far away, or having it cut up into little ones that nobody will ever be able to identify.
I guess Mayfield would have passed it along in one big fat hurry.
I know we couldn't find it. Anywhere on or around, and we tried every trick. And I mean trick, Johnny. Until he started to yell at the DA, and the DA started yelling at us. Johnny, I understand. I've just heard this, mind you.
Yeah?
Well, I understand that one of my boys... Now, while he was off duty, of course, so it was completely unofficial, you understand?
Yeah.
Well, I heard he even went so far as to roll Mayfield one night in the alley back of a nightclub.
What?
Not a sign of that, Ruby.
Randy, if the department ever catches up with these unofficial tricks...
Look, I told you, Johnny, I only heard that. But I know myself it isn't hidden anywhere in his apartment.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Randy, didn't you and your clever little boys completely overlook the Otera's necklace that was hidden in the back of a camera just about a week ago?
Oh, now that was different.
So that I had to get lucky and find it for you?
Okay. So you happen to guess right. For once.
So maybe I better get on down your way and look around for myself. Tell me, where does Mayfield live?
A hotel apartment over at 614 East 49th.
It's no use, Johnny.
Why, just because he's always gotten rid of things quickly in the past?
No.
Or because you knuckleheads couldn't find the ruby?
No, Johnny.
You haven't been able to hold him on suspicion and make a real investigation?
I mean because by the time you can get here, he won't be.
All right, then I'll grab the first plane I can and... What was that?
Your pal Mayfield has paid up his rent and he's moving out. He's got himself a reservation on a plane to Mexico City this afternoon.
Uh-oh.
By the time you get to his place, he'll be gone.
Randy.
Yeah?
Can't a genius like you come up with some excuse to hold him there for me?
Oh, flattery will get you nowhere, Johnny. The answer's no. I've run out of tricks. Anything else I might try would only get me into hot water.
No, wait, Randy.
Yeah?
Maybe I know a little trick to hold him over.
Well, don't expect any official help from me or the department if you do come down it. What kind of a trick, Johnny?
What's the difference?
Now, look, if you're thinking you're doing something illegal...
Oh, illegal, Randy, how you
that would only get us an order to clamp down on you.
Don't worry about it. I'll be in touch. Illegal? I don't know why, but I'd suddenly remember that during my run-in with Mayfield a couple of years ago, there'd been talk about a man who was fencing his stuff. A man who had been only vaguely identified as Hugo. The last name had never come to light. Okay, maybe that name still meant something to him. If so, it justified item four. $1.26 for a telegram to Mayfield. It read as follows. Urgent that before you make any deal, you call me immediately at Plaza 3, 9970. And I signed it, Hugo. And I had them put a rush on it, hoping it would give me some much-needed time. Item 5, $6 for a cab to Bradley Field. Item 6, $10.12 for a plane to New York. And when I got there, item 7 is $5.80 for a taxi to 614 East 49th Street. It was a smart, good-looking apartment hotel, which is more than I can say for the stuffy uniformed doorman.
Mr. Mayfield, did you say?
That's right. Mr. Oscar Mayfield. Is he still here? Is he in?
Whom shall I say is calling, sir?
Don't.
Don't?
Just give me his apartment number.
Your name, please?
Oh, don't worry about it.
I'm sorry, but I must have your name, sir.
It's Dollar. Now, what's the apartment number?
Dollar. Very well.
No. You don't. Just put the phone down.
I beg your pardon.
It's granted. Now, the number of his apartment.
Not unless I announce you, sir.
Now, look, I am a special investigator.
Oh, you are?
Yes, and if you'd like to call the police and check on me, only I haven't time. Look here. These are my credentials.
And I tell you, sir, that unless I... Oh, I see. Mr. Johnny Dollar.
That's right.
The insurance investigator.
Yes.
I didn't know.
Well, you do now.
Well, nonetheless, Mr. Dollar,
I... Just give me Mayfield's apartment number, please. Now, what is it?
It's 7G.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll phone that you're on your way up, sir.
You do, and I'll break your neck. 7G. Just in case he remembers what he once promised, I better make sure that this thing is working properly. Mr. Mayfield? Mayfield? I'm gone if he's already flown the coop. He left it wide open. Mr. Mayfield? The well-furnished living room was empty. So was a kind of study off at one side and a little bar kitchenette beyond it. As for the bedroom in the back, well, as I started through the door, I caught sight of a couple of handbags in front of a chest of drawers. So he was still here. What I didn't catch sight of, though, was the gun shoved around the side of the door into my back.
Just lift them up slowly, Dollar. Slowly. Well, I see whether you're armed. Yes, here it is. Thank you.
Okay, Mayfield.
Now, over there, next to the bed.
Go on.
Sure. Sure, why not? Are you happy now?
Dollar, I made you a promise once.
It's kind of foolish of you, isn't it?
I'm going to keep that promise now.
You going to pull off a shot in a place like this?
This apartment is absolutely soundproof. One of the reasons I selected it.
I see.
Well, are you ready?
Kind of looks like you were expecting me, Mayfield.
Oh, yes, Dollar, I was. You see, I figured right from the beginning that you might be called in on this case.
Then you do have the Burma Red, the ruby.
Now? Oh, of course not. You should know that I wouldn't hold on to a thing like that. Let's say it's been successfully disposed of.
And why do you hang around here?
Because I'm waiting for...
Yes?
I was waiting for you. To settle my old score with you. When I received that silly telegram, I was certain that you would be here.
No? You mean I pulled a boo-boo? Your old pal Hugo is dead?
I mean that ridiculous number you gave me to call.
Too bad. I thought it was a pretty good idea to keep you trying it until I could get here.
Oh, I'll confess it did make me change my reservation to a later plane. But after all, when I got nothing but a busy signal 8 times in a row, I naturally called the operator.
And she told you?
Yes. That it's a number used for testing. That a busy signal is all it ever gets. Obviously a trick, then. Worthy of you. So I waited for you. And when the doorman, following my explicit instructions, called me, told me you'd arrived, but I'm wasting time. What's more, I'm expecting someone else. So, Dollar, this is it.
Expecting me, maybe?
What?
Randy.
Just drop it right there, Mayfield. Gently, now. All right, now Dollar's again. Now, sit over there in that chair next to the window.
All right, anything you say, Lieutenant.
Oh, Randy, you're like the U.S. Marines. Here, you better keep this gun of his.
You know, I'm just glad you got careless and left that front door open out there.
I thought I heard a door close just before you made your dramatic entrance. But how come, Randy?
What do you mean, how come?
Well, from what you said on the phone...
So what? I'm off duty. Any reason I shouldn't just kind of drop around for a visit?
Oh, I'm glad you did.
You know something, Johnny?
When?
So am I. Now, I'll probably hate myself in the morning for saying this, but I've waited a long time for a chance to return some of the favors you've done me over the years.
That I've done you.
Well, Mayfield?
I'm afraid your so-called visit is completely pointless, Lieutenant. You must know very well that you won't find the ruby around here or anything to even remotely connect me with it.
Do I need to after the little party I walked in on? Yeah, that's right.
Huh?
You can stop smiling now.
Oh, very well. Very well if you insist on booking me for an alleged attack on Johnny Dollar with a, quote, deadly weapon, unquote. Let us go down to your station house and have done with it.
This Grand Central Station?
Shall we? Shall we go, Lieutenant?
You just stay in that chair, Mayfield, while I...
No, Randy. While I answer the door.
Okay, but leave this one open so I can hear.
Right. Yes?
Yeesh, what a fancy layout this is.
Who are you?
You ask him, Mayfield.
Well, who did you expect to find here? Santa Claus?
Yeah, well, no. Look, Mr. Mayfield, you mind putting down a gun, huh?
Not till I'm sure you're okay. Come inside.
Yeah, sure.
All right, now, what's your name?
Yeah, Rosie Gilliam. Look, you can frisk me. I'm clean.
And that package?
Well, you know, it's from the boss. It's from Hugo. It's what you've been waiting for.
Oh, it's from Hugo, huh?
Yeah, sure, honestly. He said I should deliver it and get a receipt, then maybe you'd hand me a fin or a tenner.
Oh, he did, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe I better make sure that it's whatever he was supposed to send over to me.
Well, do you think I'd meddle with it? Maybe do myself out of these delivery jobs he gives me and pays me so good?
You're on the level?
Yeah, honest. If you hear it.
Well, this contains... And I think it does. By the way, where does Hugo hang out?
Well, how should I know? All I know is he calls me now and then, meets me at some place, and gives me something I should deliver.
I guess you're okay, then. Sit down there while I take a look at this.
Yeah, sure.
We'll just see now.
You know, you're the first gent to ever open one of those deliveries in front of me.
Am I?
Yeah, you're the very first. Holy jumping. Look at that loot.
Where is he waiting to pick up the receipt, Rosie?
I don't know. He only hunts me up when he's ready. Look at all that dough.
What kind of a receipt, Rosie?
He said you'd know what kind. Oh, man, will you look at that? Will you look at it?
All right, I'll write you one.
Maybe I could have a 20 for bringing it.
I'll give you a receipt to Mr. Hugo. Let's see. How is it now that he spells his last name?
You don't know, Mr. Mayfield?
Well, don't you know?
I should know how to spell Hemperschlag.
Hemperschlag. So that's it.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Listen, you are Mayfield, ain't you?
All right, Randy.
Randy? Randy who?
Lieutenant Singer of the police. Come in, Randy.
The police? Oh, no, I've been talking. Mr. Hugo will kill me.
No, Rosie, I don't think he'll ever get the chance.
I just take it easy, Rosie.
Oh, no, no, it's a cop. I was...
We'll give you all the protection you need after we sign you in at headquarters.
Rosie, whatever your name is, you hair-brained idiot.
Just take it easy, Mayfield, and sit down. You too, Rosie.
Well, now, look at all this beautiful money.
Randy, unless I'm awfully wrong, it's payment to Mayfield for the ruby. And if you can locate a Hugo with the unlikely name of Hempeschlag, or maybe you'll save us the trouble, Mayfield. After all, now that we have his name, and who knows, if you talk, maybe the judge won't throw the whole book at you. Well?
Okay, Dollar. I know when I'm licked, I'll talk.
Mr. Hugo Hempeschlag, believe it or not, turned out to be a gem setter for the famous jewelry house of Winkler & Winkler, where he couldn't help knowing about all the important stuff brought into this country, and with the know-how to break it up after he'd arranged to have it stolen. Expense account total? Well, in view of the commission I'll get on this one, forget it. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday, from May 5th, 1962, on CBS. The show would go off the air on September 30th, 1962, outliving most, if not all, radio dramas on the air at that time, as many radio stations flipped their format to all music. Be that as it may, the show has the distinction of closing out what was known as radio's golden era. And that wraps this hour of detective drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levinier. Thanks for listening.